I want to call the joint meeting of the Ways and Means and the Finance Committee to order. Please turn off your cell phones. And I'm doing that.
I did that already.
And pagers, if you have them.
Mr. Chairman, and then being it's a joint meeting, we'll also officially then convene the Finance Committee. And Mike just mentioned Senator Solberg and I kind of rotate the chair, and last time I convened this with the same ideas. But what I just had a conversation with the commissioner, and the commissioner is going to do an overview, and then he's going to be referring to the other commissioners who can provide us with more detail relative to their budget. And what I did ask the commissioner to do would be to, I'll refer to him as the quarterback. After he's done with the overview, then he will introduce the various commissioners that would continue on with the testimony relative to their part of the budget.
And would the clerk note the role of people that come in? From both committees. Commissioner Hansen, I guess the purpose of meeting today is to have some kind of an update on the federal stimulus package and how it may have an impact on the state of Minnesota's budget as well. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify for yourself for the tape, and we'll go from there.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Tom Hansen. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Management and Budget, and the Governor has also asked me to coordinate the stimulus effort. And I thought what I would do today is provide you with some overview comments, tell you what I know, and tell you what I don't know. And then also with us today, I have Commissioner Segrin is here to talk about the education piece in a little more detail, and Abby McKenzie from the Department of Transportation to provide you with some more detail on that. So with that, I think we also have a handout coming around. What I wanted to do is talk about the different, as I described it, the three different pots of money and how they impact us, and then talk a little bit about what process we have set up here and how we're going to work with you, and then turn it over to the other two agencies, and of course any questions you might have along the way. If you recall, the bill, it's now been actually this is our fifth working day since the bill passed a week ago Friday, and I actually brought a copy. See, mine is relatively leafed through. This is actually the stimulus bill, and I'm showing you what we have. We have then, by last Thursday, we were grateful to get some official guidance that the U.S. Department of Management and Budget, Peter Orszag, the new director, he sent out a guidance to federal agencies. And while it's not specifically directed to us, it gives sets some of the internal deadlines at the federal government that will then they will then incorporate and get us information. And then we have various summaries as well from our federal context, like you do, Mr. Chairman. You get it from NCSL. We get it from the National Governors Association, as well as our National Association of State Budget Officers. The way I would describe it, its impact on our state, the pots of money that we are getting, the first pot is the more flexible money that you've heard of. I put it in the first pot because it all or in part it touches our general fund and will have an impact on our general fund budgeting this session. And the two main categories, the Fiscal Stabilization Fund and the Federal Medical Assistance Program Fund. The Federal Medical Assistance Program Fund is about $2 billion, maybe a little less. And the fiscal stabilization you see on the sheet in front of you, almost $668 million and $149 million of general purpose. The $668 was for education. Then there's what I call, or the way I've grouped it and trying to organize it, a second pot of money that doesn't necessarily, that for the most part doesn't touch the general fund. It's money that is comes into other funds. And it's a combination of infrastructure and then safety net programs in the human services area. The biggest infrastructure program money we're getting is into the trunk highway fund. It's the highways and for highways and bridges, $502 million. We're getting transit grants, urban $773 million, and transit capital grants for rural areas at $19 million. We are also the other big infrastructure program we're getting money for, drinking water and clean water. You see the numbers there. It's important to note that in these first two categories I'm describing, we have programs in place, for the most part, people in place. We receive federal money in our normal course of business. If you look back and looked at the governor's budget we introduced on the 27th of January, 26% of the all funds, $57 billion, was federal funds. So we get federal funds, Mr. Chairman. We have, like we always do with federal funds, we get our Constitution requires any revenue that comes in, any spending the Constitution says it has to be appropriated by the legislature. The legislature over the years has incorporated federal money a couple of different ways. One, it's in the normal course of a biennial budget. We incorporate our anticipated federal funds, we put it in the budget, and we pass a 2010-2011 budget. Another way we do it is the 20-day approval process, where if it's money we hadn't anticipated, we submit it to the legislature. You have granted that authority in statute that if you don't object within 20 days, we accept the federal funds. For mostly non-controversial items, that's what we do. So back to the second pot of money, there's an infrastructure piece. There is also a safety net piece, money coming in for food stamp administration, for commodity assistance, emergency food and shelter, elderly nutrition, child care, Head Start, and a number of other programs that will fall primarily at the legislature under the Human Services Finance Committee. The third pot of money is competitive grants. This is money that may touch the state's general fund. It is money we compete for with other states. We compete as a state, or we can compete as a, it may be us partnering with local units of government, universities, cities. And there are three basic areas that will impact our state budget. The first, alternative energy, energy efficiency, and green jobs. The second area is health information technology. And the third area, broadband money, segmented for rural areas as well as the more metropolitan areas. And then there's a fourth research and development area that's primarily industry or university driven. So the three pots of money, I'll go back to the first pot. The medical assistance money, Mr. Chairman, members, will be the dollar amounts we receive. You see the $781 for 09 and the $1.2 billion for 10 and 11. This is money that we have statutory authority to account for in our state forecast, which will come out on Tuesday, March 3rd. So you will see this money incorporated into the March 3rd forecast. There is maintenance of efforts that I know, Mr. Chairman, you and I have talked about at least four or five different committees.
I'm sorry, excuse me, a question for Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one question I've had on this FMAP money is, this is assuming, I know we have maintenance of effort and eligibility requirements, but we have to meet the 2008
yes.
June date. But we could also reduce our Medicaid spending in other ways that don't affect kind of the eligibility requirements, like cutting rates, for instance.
Yes.
This is assuming we don't cut rates, correct? This $1.2 billion. So if we were to cut rates to providers, that would get a Medicaid match, this number would actually come down. Am I understanding that right?
Mr. Showalter, can you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, my name is Jim Showalter, State Budget Director. And to the representative's question, he's right on track that the federal matching fund for Medicaid is a reimbursement for currently half of the cost of our Medicaid spending, calculated in our medical assistance and to a lesser extent Minnesota Care Program. If we spend less, we get less match. So it's not like they give us a revenue and we put it in the treasury and we spend it. It is a matter of how much Minnesota spends, and that is based upon what our reimbursement rates are, how many people are enrolled, all of these other factors that go into this program.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, and so I'm also right then is that this number, when you do your budget in March, is probably based on kind of the realities we all understand, is going to be less than the $2 billion. In federal money, because we are likely going to be reducing our Medicaid spending. This is assuming we continue all spending that's currently projected.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're absolutely right. The figure that you see here is assuming current law spending levels. If there's any changes up or down, those numbers will be adjusted because the federal government also has an essentially open-ended reimbursement for the state. The element, the place where you'll see that adjustment is that a cut that maybe was worth $100 million before won't be worth $100 million in the repriced governor's budget because the federal matching funds will be taking up some of that.
To that point, what year is our maintenance of effort requirement from the federal government?
It's October 1st, Mr. Chairman,
2008.
Thank you. But Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, to your question, that'll be one of the challenging pieces of, as you understand the challenge all too well for us, that we have to not only reprice everything in our budget, but specifically human services, but the extent to which we reduce any medical assistance money, that we get less. And we have to, that's why we'll end up redoing most of our human services recommendations. Mr. Chairman, I was talking about the medical assistance, and I think we covered that piece. The fiscal stabilization for education, I think at this point it might, rather than my talking about it, maybe Commissioner Segrin wants to come forward and just talk about that.
Mr. Segrin, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you. I'm Commissioner Segrin, Alice Segrin, Department of Education. In regard to the funding for education, as of February 19th, the appropriations are broken down in this manner. I think most people are interested in the stabilization fund. That is right now. And if you go on the website for the federal stimulus package, they have a big box that says these are preliminary numbers. Please do not count these as the real numbers yet. So I want to caution you on this, because these numbers have changed over the last 5 days. But as of February 19th, the stabilization fund amount was $816,489,174. And then on top of that, we have for Title I, $94,908,822. Those monies will flow out to school districts based on the existing Title I federal formula. IDEA Part B, that is the next big chunk of money. Districts would receive $189,839,228.
These are different numbers than what were given to us at
yes.
the speech, is that right?
Mm-hmm. These are as of February 19th. That's what I'm cautioning you.
Okay.
That these are, the numbers keep changing, but just to give you an idea, right now the K-12 budget in total with IDEA, with Title I, with the smaller pots of money that are also in there, and including the stabilization fund, right now we're approximating we would get about $1.1 billion. Of the stabilization money, the direction is that if you have any budget cut in either higher education or K-12, you have to use that stabilization money to fill in that reduction. Right now, Commissioner Hansen probably knows the figure better than I do, but approximately $350 million has been reduced from higher ed. So the stabilization fund would have to go to fill in that cut. We had not reduced the education budget, K-12 education budget, so then we'd have about $500 million or so that could be used to stabilize K-12 education. 81.8% of that will go to school districts based on the Title I formula. So the monies will flow out that way. It will not flow out according to our formulas, but according to the Title I formulas. And then we have 18.2% then that is monies that can be used for specific areas in general for education.
Commissioner, can I just interrupt one second? On the sheet that we have, I know the numbers aren't correct. When you talk about the education stabilization, it's broken down into two lines on at the top of this particular sheet, so 167 and 149. And that comes up pretty close to your 816. I know the numbers are not right. Of that, which we call stabilization, a certain percentage of that has to be spent on education. I assume that that percentages are the two breakdowns that were out. Is it 61% that must be in education?
Mr. Chair, the stabilization money, the 667 would represent probably the 81.2% or 8%,
okay.
And then the general purpose funds would be the $148 million.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay. Representative Cole, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Segrin, I guess maybe it's my simple mind, but I'm still confused as to what the maintenance of effort requirements are with regard to the education monies. Here, I'm a little confused. I think I understand better, although I don't necessarily understand all the implications of the Medicaid cuts that Representative Thiessen was talking about, at least not as he does. I understand the maintenance of effort requirement there. Is it identical in the education area? It almost sounds to me like you're suggesting that this money can be used in place of what would otherwise be cuts. So can you help me understand how this works? In other words, if the governor had proposed, or if the legislature finally gets around to proposing a budget, and it proposes a cut of, I don't know, 5% in education, can we use the monies here to bring that 5% cut back up to zero?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, there's a couple of things. There's money for special education in Title I, and that's a significant amount of money. And then on top of that, then you have stabilization money. And the stabilization money is used to fund any cuts, any reductions in both higher ed and K-12. Right now, we don't have the governor's, under the governor's budget, he has not proposed reducing K-12 education. He did reduce higher ed, so that would have to be filled in first. And then the $500 million or so that's left can be used to flow to the K-12 system on top of the special ed money that they're receiving and on top of the Title I money that they are receiving. Does that answer your question?
Representative Coles, follow up.
Mr. Chairman, let me try another way. Let's dumb this down just for my benefit. If we were going to get $5 from the federal government and our K-12 budget was $100 and the legislature finally got around to passing its budget and we passed a budget that spent $95 on K-12, can we take that $5 then and to get back up to zero? And in other words, we're basically freeing up and have some flexibility with some money that would otherwise have gone to education in our general fund?
Commissioner, or?
Mr. Chair, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. Representative Cole. Yes, there are, if the $100 was the greater of the 2008 or 2009 funding for education, yes, you could use the federal funds to restore education funding to that greater level if you were to pass a reduction in education this year.
We have several more on it, and I know we have lots of different departments that want to come up and testify. So as I call on you, if you can keep your questions and answers short. We'd appreciate that. Representative Clark, I missed you.
That's okay, Mr. Chairman. It would be for each of the departments that come forward. I just wanted to find out, as we did earlier, about what the matching requirements might be for any of these particular funds, either full or partial matching.
Okay. Representative Aver, you had a
question. Thanks. Just a short question. Everybody wants to know, how soon will there be a run for districts so they can know what to expect? Is that a month away yet, or how close is that?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I want to keep saying that.
That's okay. You can call me anything you want, just don't call me late for supper.
Okay. I promise I won't do that. Mr. Chair, we don't have any available data at this point, and Ms. Weber's been on this. She's actually our coordinator for the education area, and it is just evolving as we speak. So until we get some final numbers, we're not going to be able to run any district numbers at this point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, if I could interject. We for the Title I funding, we actually receive those allocations from the U.S. Department of Ed at the local education agency level, and then we make adjustments at the state level. For the special education funding, our program finance division is working on running some allocations, so we could at least get some preliminary information out there with some very strong cautions to districts.
Mr. Chair, and we're hesitating doing runs at this point because, I mean, we're trying to have a look at the ballpark, but, you know, the minute we put a number out there, and if districts start planning based on that number, and then that changes somewhat, even if it's $100,000 to $200,000, then, you know, it's going to come back on us to say, well, you told us it was this number. So we're being very cautious about that. In fact, you know, the numbers I just gave you, the February 19th numbers, that may change in another couple of days. So we're just trying to be cautious. We're trying to tell you what the general amount of money is, about $1.1 billion, about $800 million of that will be stabilization. The rest is going into Title I and special ed. That's driven by those formulas. And even the stabilization money will be driven by the Title I formula when it's distributed, whatever monies we end up giving to the school. So that's kind of the general concept. We have maintenance of efforts for special ed to get to Representative Clark's question. If we do receive special education money, we are required to maintain effort on that money.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Segrin, one of the considerations I know with all this federal stimulus money is it's one-time money, it's 2 years. A lot of these programs are ongoing programs. We'll be propping them up and possibly even expanding some of them with these dollars. How are you looking at this two-year time frame with the dollars coming in with ongoing need after that? One-time dollars coming in, we kind of set up a cliff in 2 years. What are the thoughts on that from the department standpoint? How are we going to deal with that? How is that being considered as we look at the allocation of dollars?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, well, we are cautioning school districts to not create any kind of ongoing programs that would require funds out into the future. You can use the money, stabilization money, for anything under No Child Left Behind or IDEA, and there are prohibitions. You cannot use the money to pay maintenance costs. You cannot use them to build stadiums. You can't use the money to upgrade vehicles. You can't improve standalone facilities if you're looking at building or doing that kind of thing. There's also requirements. Those are the uses that you can use, but we're cautioning you to just use it for one-time expenditures if you can, instead of building in ongoing obligations.
Representative Demmer, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you just mentioned a few capital expenditure type things that you are not able to use these dollars for. Is that a blanket prohibition against capital expenditures?
No.
New school buildings?
No. You can use.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Demmer, you can use the stabilization money for modernization, renovation, or repair of public school facilities, including renovation and repairs that are consistent with recognized green building technology. You also can use it for the ESEA Act, So any programs that you have currently under No Child Left Behind, anything for, you can use monies for IDEA, of course, because monies are going there. But again, there's a maintenance of effort issue that you've got to be aware of. That's probably the most problematic funding stream that we're dealing with right now. You can use it for the Carl Perkins Act for technology, career, and technical. So you can use it for all of those programs. But we're just cautioning, be careful that you're not building new programs in a time when this money will go away in 2 years. And that will be a kind of a dilemma for school districts.
Okay, Representative Bisson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, a little bit confused. First, just on how the dollars will flow. Is there any of this fiscal stabilization dollars in education, will any of it be available in this fiscal year?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, we believe that the fiscal stabilization funds, we will need to wait until we see what final action the legislature takes with respect to higher education and K-12 education, because the first requirement for that is that it be used to fill any gaps in funding from the 2008-2009 funding levels.
Representative Biskins, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question. Commissioner, on these dollars, it almost sounds in your testimony that the dollars are going to be going directly to the schools, but I don't think that's quite right. Commissioner, what kind of flexibility does the administration have in extending these dollars, and how much would need legislative action to extend these dollars? I'm just kind of looking at what's the role of the legislature, how much do we have to be concerned, how much say do we have in how this money is spent and the tails that this money would bring with it.
Commissioner R.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, the
81.8, your name again? I'm
it's
sorry.
Michelle Weber.
Michelle Weber. Thank you, Michelle.
The 81.8% of the fiscal stabilization funds requires that the first use of those funds be to restore any gaps in funding to K-12 education or higher education. So that is an area in which we would need to see what action the legislature takes to determine the use of that. The 18.2% of the funds that can be used for general purposes, that does not have the same stipulations on it. So there is some flexibility and opportunity to utilize those funds earlier.
Okay. Mr. Chair, so I'm just going to paraphrase, Mr. Chair, and see if you understood it the same way I do. So in other words, the body does have the ability to focus where a lot of this dollars goes based upon the budgets we put forward. Is that your understanding, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Biskin, Representative Biskin, I think that's the case, and in working with the Commissioner of Finance and trying to understand the language of the Fiscal Stabilization Act, the legislature, I think, is going to be playing a very major role in that. In your packets also, I don't know if it's in your packets, but I passed out to you, is a memo that Representative or Bill Marks put together a few years ago on just the general outline of what the law states on as we deal with federal funds. And it's a little different, as the Commissioner stated, when we're in session, when we're not in session. You might want to just review that. We're in session, so I think we have a bigger role. Okay? I have Representative Carlson, Beinert, Broad, and Grivey. Representative Carlson?
Chairman, I'd like to go back to a comment by Ms. Weber. Ms. Weber, I'd like to go back to a comment that you made relative to 08-09, and you referred to them as funding gaps, and then you indicated that you'd have to wait and see what action the legislature took, and in the current fiscal year there was the unallotment, and when you mentioned then that the funding would have to be provided, for example, for higher education, there was an unallotment this year by the governor in higher education. So would that be a funding gap then that would have to be filled?
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to
you're going to be looking at both
Mr. Showalter,
all that money distributed between higher ed and K-12, or Maybe Mr. Showalter would be the one then.
Mr. Chair, the issue is whether the unallotment for higher education needs to be filled in before any of the other stabilization funds could be accessed. And the threshold here is that the money is available for funding at the 2006 level up to the 2008 level. So it really depends on which institution you're talking about or how much you're talking about. The unallotment doesn't take you all the way down to the 2006 level. So I guess the short version is no, you don't have to fill in the unallotment, and it is a matter of how you use those funds within the parameters that the Congress gave us. Spending has to be in excess of the 2006 level up to the 2008 level.
Mr. Chairman, okay, so that would include higher ed at the 06 level, because earlier conversations there was reference that the money had to be distributed based on the 06 formulas, is the way I think we put it, when you only had about 45 minutes at that point to look at the budget. For K-12, but I think you're saying then that it would have to be looked at relative to higher education the same way. It could be using 06.
Mr. Schulhofer. Yes, Mr. Chair. It's sort of a question of not that states cannot reduce spending in higher education or K-12, and in fact Minnesota has done relatively less of those cuts than other states. What I think Congress is trying to do is make sure that there's at least some funding so that there's a baseline level of education and higher education spending at the 2006 level or higher. We're already above that.
Okay, that answers the question then, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
Representative
Beiner. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, Ms. Weber, I'm wondering how the proposed shift in school payments would be treated under this federal stabilization dollars and whether they'd be considered maintenance of effort requirements.
Mr. Chair, I would defer also to Commissioner Hansen on that.
Mr. Hansen, did you hear that question? There was a question of Mr. Showalter, Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair, Representative Breinart, we are required to submit an application or plan to the U.S. Department of Education assuring certain compliance requirements, one being that we are at a spending level equivalent to 2006. We will be proposing in that plan to treat the shifts in the same manner that we treat our maintenance of effort calculation for special education funds, and we do that on an entitlement basis.
So it would be an entitlement basis of what they're entitled to, not what necessarily the state spends on education as a
correct, Mr.
great amount. Okay. Does that answer your question? Representative Broad?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple questions for Mr. Hansen and related to the education. My understanding
of... Can you use your mic a little bit better?
Sorry. I'm in a strange location here, but my understanding, if I'm understanding the education funds, it's almost a strange thing that the stimulus bill is doing to the state in that it's almost encouraging cuts to education. By states. If you look at how it boxed in funding on Medicaid and how it boxed in funding on Health and Human Services, by not allowing it to supplant funding, by not allowing it to fill in any gaps, it seems like it's a strange twist of fate that the bill has brought to education funding. Am I understanding that properly? And that's actually for Commissioner Segrin, and then I'll get my questions for Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Segrin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, we can either cut education and then fill it in with the stabilization money, or we can, propose to not cut education and still use the stabilization money for more education. So either way, we've got some money to stabilize education. That's the way I'm looking at it. We also have, on top of the stabilization money, you have your Title I and your special ed money, too. So it's just to stabilize. It's exactly what it says. It's just to kind of stabilize and bridge, if you will, until we can get into a better economic time. I don't know. Commissioner Hansen, you may want to comment on that. But.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, we are fairly fortunate. A lot of other states have actually cut K-12 and are actually using their stabilization fund to build back to the 06 level. We are fortunate that we have increased our funding since 2006 and actually have some flexibility on how, you know, in increasing, at least in K-12, mm-hmm. which is probably what we'll do.
Representative Brown, a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your comments. It's just a strange that if education was a priority under this stabilization bill, that they would allow those gaps and those cuts, and so it just seems to me that it's an unfortunate byproduct of the bill that it allows that. But nonetheless, one question related to it, I see in the packet there's this jobs creation plan by the Office of Speaker Pelosi, and I'm wondering, is there an independent source out there that you could point to that would provide us some better information related to how many jobs will or won't be created in Minnesota by the stabilization proposal, recognizing, of course, Commissioner, that all these job creation numbers tend to not pan out. So I just wanted to get a sense of where I might look for some independent source.
So your indication is that the stabilization, the independent source would be bad too, right? Is that what I'm saying? Mr. Hansen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, anytime you get into, I have learned with economics or forecasting or determining how many jobs are created by this or that activity, there are a lot of factors, and biases creep into those factors, and no one source is probably better than any other source.
Saying it sounds like job need. Representative Greiling.
I don't know if I'm.
Commissioner Hansen, okay.
I was just giving.
I didn't mean to tweak you that much.
Giving the broad caveat, Chairman. But I don't know if anybody from BEAD is here, but we have a jobs estimation that we do every month from BEAD. I don't know if I'm. I would assume we are going to have to do something like that because we have a responsibility under the Act to determine how many jobs are created by certain activities.
Representative Broad.
And Mr. Chairman, well then I assume that we won't be seeing this number quoted all over broadly since it is just one of those sources. But my last question is related to the funding gaps that are going to be created by the compelling of spending in the state. And what I'm trying to get to is the Medicaid dollars and the special education dollars are requiring certain amounts of spending by the state, yet those dollars are one-time dollars for ongoing expenditures. And so I'm wondering how great of a gap we're going to be forcing off into the future and how that might be reflected in forecasts and also in terms of budget numbers going forward. If we're required to spend $2 billion, not allowed to make cuts to Medicaid programming or other things, what then are we saddling in terms of liability on the citizens of the state of Minnesota?
Commissioner Hansen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, the extent to which we use federal money to unload a cut that continues into 12 and 13, we will increase our 12 and 13 deficit. For example, the governor's budget has $1.4 billion or so in human services reductions. If we undo all of them, you know, theoretically, those 1.4 continue into 12 and 13 and actually ramp up and give us more savings in 12 and 13. You will increase your 12 and 13 deficit.
Over and above what's projected already. So,
yes. From the 2.5.
The next one is Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Like often happens when you're way down on the list, you have different things to say than when you first volunteer.
Okay. Well, we'll allow you to say different things, though.
Okay, good. Well, I was going to talk about the K-12 funding and maintenance of effort, but I would comment first on Representative Broad's comments on the federal government funding health and human services and special education rather than K-12 education. And that's because they are just stabilizing the funding that we do have, and they never have pretended to fund K-12 education other than special ed and Title I. We in the state have the responsibility for funding K-12 education. I get on to what I was going to say, and that is I just came, as did Commissioner Segrin, from speaking at the MSBA, the School Boards Conference, over at the History Center. And they are very worried about us, playing games with this federal stimulus money for education, because it is true that we had a hearing on this last week with Dr. Melcher here as well, that we could cut education funding and then fill it in with the stimulus money. But then when we get done with the stimulus money, in 2 short years, we would have permanent cuts to K-12 education, which would impair our ability to ever get started with the new Minnesota Miracle. Also, if we compound that by shifting education, the $1.3 billion, then that also has to be paid back. And so it could take us several years just to get back to square one when, in fact, we haven't had inflationary increases for our K-12 students for a dozen plus years. As far as special education, this came up with our fiscal staff here in the House. We could, if special education doesn't show up in the forecast, like health and human services, because it's capped. When the governor says he did not cut education, we have to remember that he made the biggest cut of all last time we had a deficit, and that's still there. And that is capping special education. And so it doesn't show up in the forecast like health and human services. It is the single reason the school districts go out to raise property taxes with their levy referendum. It's roughly the same amount that we cap special ed and don't fund it as to what school districts have to raise property taxes for. And that was a governor's proposal. So I don't think I can sit here and honestly let us say that the governor is protecting education, because he's continuing with that cap. If he was protecting education, he would take off that cap, and then we would have a whole different forecast when it comes to our K-12 students. But when we look at the maintenance of effort for special education, we could take the federal money and have that supplant what otherwise would be increased for because we raised the cap a little bit last session. And so there is room to do that. But I just think that it's a very complicated thing, and we have to balance the budget better than we have been doing here in the last few years. And this federal money should just tide us over for the federal portion. But I hope we don't compound it with other one-time places to go, like the shift that the governor's proposed. When he's holding K-12 education harmless, he is not. In addition to capping special ed, he's proposing that we shift the schools, pay them late $1.3 billion. And, for instance, at the hearing in Bemidji that I was at last Friday, that is an annual cost that will be there forever until we pay back the shift for Bemidji schools of $400,000. So that's a cut in my book. When they have to do the short-term borrowing and then pay for that this year while we're paying them late. So I just had to speak, Mr. Chair, and let people know that K-12 is not being held harmless with the governor's proposal. There's shifts. Have to pay for those, and special ed continues to be capped, which is huge. It's so huge that it's the same, roughly, as all the levy referendum costs in the state, and those are property taxes.
Representative Clark?
Kevin, I was just wanted to comment on Mr. Hansen's comment, I guess, in what Representative Vaughn was asking. I guess those deficits in the future are only if the stimulus does not work, if we have no stimulus, right? If we have a stimulus from the stimulus package, we're actually going to see more jobs, and that deficit would be less. So it just seems to me like what you're answering to her question was, if you put the money in and nothing happens and we don't have a stimulus, and I just think we should point out, hopefully, that this will work.
Mr. Chairman. Mr.
Hansen, do you want to comment? I would like to keep the meeting going if we can. Representative, did you need an answer?
Well, I guess it's Mark.
Want to have a comment?
I hope that we, Representative Clark, I hope you're right. I hope we exceed the forecast. But for purposes of the stimulus, the economic impacts of the stimulus will be factored into our macroeconomic forecast that we, here you are, deliver on March 3rd. I'm hopeful, like you are, that we, in the years to come, exceed the forecast, and that this creates a lot more jobs than we anticipated, and that we grow out of the recession more quickly.
Thank you.
Commissioner, anybody else in for the Commissioner of Education? You have some additional departments that want to come forward, right? Thank you, Commissioner. Seagren?
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Showalter had a few brief comments, and then we'll bring Abby McKenzie from MnDOT.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name again for the record is Jim Showalter. I just wanted to add in a couple of points as we were going through this for the committee's background. I think you already mentioned the federal funds review process, but just wanted to make sure that the committee is aware, or the committees are aware of the federal funds process that's outlined in Mr. Marks's memo. These funds, for the most part, are going to existing federal programs through those programs, and so notification of those intentions and how much we expect to be spending will be coming through. The sheet that we distributed today is really an set of estimates from the federal funds information for states, a source of information for MCSL, source of information for the state budget officers for NGA as well. We will be getting more up-to-date, more precise estimates from all of the state agencies in the coming days and weeks. And at some point in the near future, we will be moving from these central generalized estimates to something pretty specific. And those will be the figures that actually will be forwarded to the legislature for authorization.
It's Representative Kahn, question?
Yes.
Can you use your mic?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Hanson, I'm concerned about how legislative oversight will work into this package, particularly on the federal funds issue. You know, I think I'm particularly interested, of course, in the sense of what we're doing with information management of this, and you know, one of the issues of the health match, which we will come up. It turns out that the reason that the appropriate state mechanism for overviewing that project didn't come into place was because of the federal funds. And I know we're all taking a greater look at internal auditing and external auditing and so forth. But how will that fit into this package?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, that's an excellent point. We are facing what I would consider almost an unprecedented challenge between quick obligation and quick action on all of our parts, on your part, in your deliberation process, as well as our part in administering, but at the same time, quick obligation, but also maintaining program efficiency and stability is an incredible challenge. And it's important to note that it's figuring out and appropriating money and identifying the right projects on the front end, but managing the information flow, making sure there's accountability and internal controls on the front and the back is a high priority that we've started to work through the bill. Some of the things that you'll see forthcoming, we should have a website just on informationally purposes up fairly shortly. We're working on a more in-depth website where you can actually drill down on information and spending. And we also, as part of our, as you know, you and I've talked about before your committee as well as privately, are the governor's our recommendation for more internal control staff to help with this process. But it is something that we are very aware of. I'll be talking to the legislative auditor and getting his advice and working with you, but it is a big piece of this going forward.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, while the commissioner is still there, I just want to comment, and maybe you can comment as well. I think it's important when we're looking at the stimulus funds that are coming in to understand that the governor had already built into his original budget $920 million, which we all understood was the best guess at that point in time. But when we look at these totals, keep in mind that 920 was already built in.
Yes. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Representative Conant, I'm sorry, do you have a follow-up?
Well, actually, on a different aspect, what is going to happen with the three states that are rejecting the stimulus? Then are they rejecting them in total, or are they rejecting them in part, and is there an intention of someone working with the federal government to see that those are contributors to the states who will take them?
And a follow-up, add on to that question, do they have the ability to accept parts and not other parts? Or do you accept it all or none? Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn.
And just one other point. I assume that despite what I heard on one of the more dubious media sources today, that Governor Pawlenty is not in that system.
We will be sending our certification letter. We will be accepting federal funds. Representative Kahn, I'm not sure in those other states. I've heard, Governor Stanford in South Carolina, and then I think there were two others. There's a certification process that we have to certify within 45 days. We're actually working on our letter. But then if the governor doesn't certify the legislature, so I'm not sure in those states if the legislature, I'd be very surprised if a state turned down this type of assistance in this type of economy. I'm fairly certain we can accept some and reject other funds.
I'd like to follow up on that. Is it the intention of the governor to accept everything, all the stimulus package? Because if not, I think there's a provision for the legislature to accept.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, if I may, I think that's part of the budget review. There's going to be strings attached to certain pots of money that aren't present in other pots of money. In some places, it may make more sense for Minnesota to go after those funds, and others not. I don't think we have any blanket answer to say, yes, every source of federal funding makes sense for Minnesota. Probably they do, but I think that's part of what needs to happen once the forecast is done and we get more information from state agencies about how these federal funds work in the Minnesota context.
So we've kind of opened up a Pandora's box on this question, I guess.
Representative Chairman, just to summarize, the money is a good thing. I could see, just as a the general statement, it's hard for me to anticipate a situation where we want to accept the federal money, but if it requires matching money in the current biennium and we have to make budgeting decisions, if it requires an ongoing things like that. But I think in general you can anticipate we're going to do our very best to accept every dime.
Well, Commissioner, just a little bit of follow-up on that. The governor has said that if there's some matching requirements, particularly in the area of, say, of clean water, that would be appropriate use for our bonding procedures. And so I would assume that we'll have some kind of communication from the governor to the chair of Housing Committee,
yes,
and others on those particular issues that are important for our community.
Yes, we are looking at those issues.
And Mr. Chair, if I may just add,
yes,
I think this committee in particularly is aware that there is no single federal funds approach for the state of Minnesota. There are many different statutes that govern throughout each of the committees, and so just to say that there's a blanket approach to federal funds is difficult at this point in time. There's many, many different elements that are present in each of these committees.
Okay.
I just wanted to be sure that that is clear, that both the review process and the types of programs that we'll be taking money on are quite varied.
Yeah, I have Representative Kahn and Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I guess part of the thrust of my question was, are the governors and the legislatures in the states that are accepting them going to be lobbying to look at the redistribution of those funds at this time of the period, if it's clear that they're, instead of just having them go into some federal limbo of some sort? And then the other point is that if the governor rejects it, but the legislature has the ability to accept it, does that mean that the legislature gets to accept it without passing a bill that the governor has to sign? Or what? What does that mean?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, your second question, the Constitution is fairly specific. The appropriation power is with the power of the legislature, and then the governor signs the bill. That's how we appropriate Trump's, the federal government can give us and provide us with assistance, spell out various uses for it, but whether we use it or not follows our state Constitution. And your first question was?
What happens to the state, the money of the states that reject it?
Well, I've already spoken with our the governor's federal office to make sure we are to help us if the case comes that we can get the money.
Representative Carlson?
Commissioner, you indicated that you will be sending a certification letter and that you would be trying to maximize the federal funds, but you seem to indicate that there's a possibility that there might be some that you would reject. Do you have to reject those at the time you send the certification letter, or can you do that?
The general acceptance.
But the general acceptance, and then later those determinations can be made.
Yeah, there might be some ABC fund, some fund somewhere that for some reason we all, I mean, if we're rejecting it, it's probably going to be that you think it's a pretty good idea too. And I don't know what that would be. As Jim said, it's a, there are multiple funds, and I'm just careful not to make a blanket statement.
Commissioner, I think your last point is what's extremely important, and that is your suggestion that be a joint.
It's going to be a joint, yeah.
And executive branch.
It has to be a pretty compelling situation.
I have Representative Flails, Representative Hosen, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I just would like to understand, for instance, we have the Washington County landfill is a prime source of water contamination in the East Metro. The PCA is already working on a cleanup plan with 3M and other entities. If stimulus dollars are available, would a project like that landfill cleanup be accelerated? Would we be able to apply for dollars so that could be a more comprehensive cleanup, more quickly done? Is that the kind of thing that I'm just needing a concrete example of something that would be appropriate for these dollars?
Mr. Hansen or Showalter?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swales, there are pots of money, and I'm not a cleanup funds expert, but there is Superfund hazardous waste money. States are eligible for grants to conduct site assessments. There's brownfield money, leaking underground storage tank money. There is, the dollar amounts that the feds put in the bill are smaller. The Superfund hazardous waste is $600 million, nationally not as much. I don't know if we'll be able to access some of that. I don't know what some of these other accounts, but that would be it would be nice to be able to leverage some money for that project.
Okay. Well, I have Representative Rukavina next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, over the last 2 years, I've tried to get the Department of Employment and Economic Development to put a real live human being in workforce centers as it relates to unemployment insurance. Now we're seeing layoffs all around the state and some fairly, senior employees who may not have the technological skills. I see there are two pots of money in the stimulus package regarding UI grants and unemployment services. I know that Commissioner McElroy had asked, or I guess the commissioner didn't, but one of his staff, to dip into the Workforce Development Fund to pay workers to put them in our workforce centers around the state. But now that we've got this money coming in, these two different pots, can you tell me, I'm assuming that money would be eligible to actually put someone, a state worker, back in a state building. So am I misinterpreting what that money can be used for? And then if it can be used for, is the governor going to threaten to veto my bill again like he's done the last 2 years and I tried to put people in these workforce centers to help unemployed people out?
And a third part of that, if I may, the timing of that, because some of that might be extremely important to be doing this fiscal year.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I would defer if there's anybody from BEAD here that could answer that. I'm not sure.
Nobody from DEED is in the audience?
Well, that must mean I have carte blanche to decide how to spend that money, because with the pot of money that DEED has here, I can't believe there's no staff from DEED.
Representative Rukavina, we tried pretty hard not to veto your bill.
Pardon me?
I said we tried pretty hard not to veto your bill.
You don't do a very good job. I mean, every year I get threatened, and so that's why I'm asking, because finally somebody at BEAD has come around to the line of thinking, Commissioner, that we should actually have some state employees in our workforce centers to help the unemployed,
rather than using that wagon pleasure money and other monies to get from the feds the last several years for, to me, being nothing but a human resource administrator for our businesses out there, and that's fine. But, you know, I've got 600 miners that just laid off, and I think 150 on top of that that were working at that plant that are from Lawrence District and Representative Ansel's district, and most of them are, you know, my age and older, and they don't really, haven't dealt with technology. They can fix a 250-ton production truck, but they probably can't go online and figure out their unemployment insurance. So I am very concerned about the fact that we've got people in there. And the last 2 years, it's been, Rukavina, you put anybody in a workforce center, we're going to veto your bill. So I really would like to know if these two pots of money here, unemployment service at 69 6.9 million, almost 7, and UI administrative grants can be used for those purposes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I'll call Commissioner McElroy, and I'll have him get a hold of you. I'm not sure.
Thank you.
There you go. We have Representative Housen, Rod Abra Wagenia.
Representative Housen. I just wanted to follow up on what I heard you say forcefully, and I think I feel so keenly after this morning's discussion, and that is, as never before, there is no time for drumming up the works. There is no time for partisan positioning or rhetoric. And I would hope that on a daily basis, chairs are meeting with administrative folks so that we are all doing everything we have to do on a daily basis to get ready. And I think the people deserve nothing less.
Thank you, Representative Rod.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hausman, I totally agree, which is why we are so anxious to hear the budget proposal being put forward by both the House and the Senate. And, Mr. Chairman, I just to be rhetorically clear, I continue to hear the governor is going to reject, or questions related to whether the governor is going to reject or not reject the stimulus dollars. And it just seems to me that that's really not the question and not the discussion. I mean, if the legislature decides to pass a bill that changes eligibilities or changes something that the stimulus dollars require, I hope that the rhetoric is not that the governor rejected those dollars. It's just through the legislative process we passed bills that didn't allow us to be eligible for those dollars. And so, again, the governor has said he's accepting the dollars. Now it's up to us in our responsibilities to determine how and what dollars we are eligible for. And so I think it is important to work together with the governor's staff, and I think the governor has been very welcome to the discussions, and I know that he will continue to do that, or at least that's the perspective I have from the outside watching this process. But I do think it's really important to not talk about it, the dollars being rejected or accepted. It's a matter of what are we eligible for and how do we use the dollars in a way that does not create significant liabilities out into the future that we just can't afford.
Representative Broad, let me just clarify something and clarify it very clear to you. I work very strongly with Commissioner Hansen and the Governor's office on many issues, and I think the tone was, and I think we set that again too, and the commissioner affirmed it to me just a few minutes ago, that we're in this together. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a thought, and I have just a request. To the whole thing about working together, I think that Representative Hausman, for in making her comments, has given a good example about how to incorporate the minority leads into the various things, and you also, Mr. Chair. And I think that as that can be done consistently throughout the system, you'll find quicker floor debates and maybe less amendments, because there'll be that other voice, and then that'll dovetail with the governor. So that's meant to be a constructive, I can only speak for myself and a few others, but I think that would be productive, and the product will be very good. But if the when the commissioners come next time, if they could annotate what years they think this money is going to be available, maybe we could ask item by item, but I mean, they don't know yet, but I respect that. I heard Commissioner Segrin's comment loud and clear, we just don't know. But as these drafts get redone, you know, if this is the 09 backfilling, like the FMAP for the 09, that's clearly marked. So thank you very much.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Hansen, I just wanted to follow up on Representative Swale's question about the Washington County landfill. The state does have responsibility for that landfill. It is leaking, and that makes us, of course, liable for suit if it's not cleaned up. And we tried something last year that didn't work. Can you follow up and find out if, indeed, that money could be used to put a triple liner under that landfill? That's what we called for in legislation last year. If you would do that.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Lagunias, I'm writing it down right now. I would love to.
Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to respond to Representative Broad's comment, which is the standard rhetoric that we've heard about where is your legislative plan. I think one of the things we've seen today, listening to the Commissioner's very thoughtful analysis on what's going on, is that the Governor gave us a budget as he was supposed to. We knew it had to be rewritten because of the federal stimulus plan. Commissioner Hansen has told us that we'll get a new budget on March 3rd, and that will hopefully incorporate, although we gather that there's a lot of uncertainty with some of the stimulus plan, so it would be totally irresponsible for the legislature to go out on its own without getting this additional information, and we have the ability, instead of trying to set up a conflicting situation,
I'm trying my best to not get into
with the governor and the commissioner. So I hope we'll do that despite Representative Broad's comments.
Forecast on March 3rd.
Forecast on March
3rd. Don't try to kill me. I can't get through that.
Commissioner, you had said that you wanted to bring up the next section. I wonder if we have about 20 minutes left. I'm going to kind of cut off some debate on this, if we may, and you can debate out in the hall afterwards. The next section, I think, was the transportation. That's an important section of it, if we can bring that up.
Okay.
I never was. If you can identify yourself, Abby, for the tape.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Abby McKenzie, and I'm the Director of the Office of Investment Management at MnDOT. And I have just a very brief PowerPoint overview that, at a very high level, talks about the various transportation elements in the bill. Would it be worth me going over that? I think it's just about 10 slides.
If you can do that in a quick fashion.
I'll move forward very quickly. This is a very, very high-level overview. The Congress and President provided about $48 billion in additional funding for transportation across the nation. The transportation provisions in the stimulus bill mostly include increases to existing programs, so the program criteria exist and the like. Of the $27.5 billion in new highway and bridge funding, Minnesota's share is estimated to be just slightly more than $500 million. 67% of this will come as discretionary funding, although it is still required that it be all projects be Title 23 eligible. And 30% will come through the Surface Transportation Program population formula, and then a final 3% through enhancement funding. And I did put in your packet a little one-pager that gives some of the details on the highway piece of it. And I would just report to you the timeline there, because the timeline for transportation is fairly aggressive. And then on the back shows that distribution of funding by those various transportation, highway transportation funding formula. So back to the front on the on the timeline, the bill, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, requires that states receive their transportation apportionment within 21 days of enactment. So we will receive that apportionment no later than March 10th. MnDOT's first letting of transportation projects funded with this economic stimulus fund will be March 13th. And we have already advertised that letting as of today. Within 30 days, the governor must certify the maintenance of effort of state highway funds. Because of the March 13th letting, we'll need budget authority to award those construction contracts by March 31st from you all. So that's a very important date to us. There's extensive reporting requirements in the transportation elements of this bill as well as all the others. We have reporting requirements in 90, 100, and 80, and then 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. Those require us to report how many projects have been advertised, how many projects have been awarded, how many projects are under construction, and jobs created, as well as our receipt and expenditure of funds. 50% of our funds must be obligated within 120 days. That's this June. After that, states who have not committed 50% of their discretionary funds will have those funds redistributed, and we intend to be a state that receives those redistributed funds. Then 100% of our obligation authority must be committed within 365 days, and after that, there'll be another redistribution of funds to the states who have committed their federal transportation funds. And then finally, on September 30th, 2010, funds lapse. So things are moving very quickly at MnDOT, and we are well in place to meet all those deadlines. There is another supplemental grant that is not does not go automatically to the states by formula. This is the surface discretionary grant for National Surface Transportation Program. It's a $1.5 billion program. It is multimodal in nature. Projects must be a minimum of $20 million, a maximum of $300 million, and no state can receive more than $300 million. Within these need to be projects of regional, national, and metropolitan significance. As with all these federal funds, it's 100% federal funding. No state match is required. The grant criteria must be available to the states within 90 days and grant submissions by the states within 180 days. A little bit more on that. Now to the other modes, transit capital. We have, nationally, there's $6.9 billion of transit capital. These go through the two major transit capital programs. The 5703 program is to the major metropolitan areas. $73 million, or the vast majority, goes through those. Those go directly to those MPO areas. Of the $73 million, about $68 million will go to the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And $19 million will go through the 5311 funds. Those are the Greater Minnesota Transit Funds.
Can I have her finish this? Would you just hold?
Just four more slides.
Okay. Quickly, if you would, please.
These are capital. These expenditures must be a capital in nature, so therefore buses and vans, bus garages, and the like. Again, 100% federal eligible. Because these are well-established federal programs, the timing here is also quite aggressive, although not quite as aggressive as violation. 50% must be obligated within 50 days, and the remaining 50% within a year. High-speed rail and intercity passenger rail. This is a national competitive program. It's established at $8 billion. You can see the grants. They're under three existing programs that were established as part of the Amtrak reauthorization bill, the high-speed rail corridor program, the intercity passenger rail corridor program, and the congestion reduction grants. This one's going to take a little bit longer to play out. USDOT will issue grant requirements, criteria, and the like in 120 days and have it used by September 30th. 2012, so 2 years later. Again, airport improvement grants were capitalized nationally in the bill at $1.1 billion. We think Minnesota will get about $15 to $20 million of those grants. Again, they're capital in nature, so the projects would include rehabbing pavement, expanding runways, or rehabbing or building airport facilities. Half must be awarded through the Federal Aviation Administration within 120 days, and the remainder must be obligated in 1 year. And like the highway and transit portion, the funds must be obligated by September 30th, 2010. Well, I think that's the high overview. This is more of a presentation, but I think that gives you a sense of what's in the program and our timeline for moving forward.
Abby, would you make those available for the committee members, please? Give them to Jerry Boyce, and she'll distribute them to.
Yep.
I have Representative Rukavina, Westrom, Junkie, and Wagenius. Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, ma'am.
We have just 10 minutes.
The rural grants for transit, is this a misprint here that it's going to the Met Council? I thought you had a division in MDOT there.
No, let me...
It's Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, let me go back to that. I went over that very quickly.
On the handout, it says Met Council.
That's the 5307, the urban portion. We'll go through the Metropolitan Planning Organizations. We have seven of those in Minnesota, the Twin Cities. And the vast majority of that 5307 funding does go to the Metropolitan Council. Of the $73 million, like 68 goes. But there's a separate program, the 5311 program, which is about $690 million, and of that, about $19 million will go to Minnesota for non-urbanized area, and that will be the Greater Minnesota capital programs that you've been familiar with.
But Mr. Chair, the Met Council is going to handle the money on this sheet. That's what I'm asking.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Hansen points out that's wrong. The rule goes through men.
We'll change that. I thought Hansen was pulling another
question. So Representative Westrom?
Goes to the triple R.
Representative Westrom?
Chair, to the testifier, question pertaining, I don't know if this, there we go, pertaining to using the funds in, I think you said, 120 days. Are there provisions being put in place to expedite review processes for projects? This past weekend, Friday, I held several town meetings, and that was a recurring theme of concern from contractors and those going ahead with projects, that oftentimes the review we put in place takes longer than they'll ever be able to get done in the short time frame. And so I'm wondering, are we doing something like we did with the 35W bridge to basically expedite in 30, 60, 90 days to get review processes done and get projects shovel ready and in the ground?
I think that's an excellent question. Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, we have taken many, many steps to expedite processes, and I think the fact that we've advertised $50 million worth of projects today and we will let those by March 13th is evidence of how much effort we've put into designing, approving, and awarding construction contracts in a very expedited manner. Nevertheless, all of our federal requirements apply. Our permitting agencies, our NEPA requirements, all of those must be in place. We have no forgiveness from those. We have not sought forgiveness from those. We are working very closely with the permitting agencies, and they are giving us great attention. We're working very closely with our division FHWA, and they're working very closely. And what is typically a 14-week plan review has now been down to a 4-week plan review. So we really are very, very confident we can meet these timelines.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. I'm glad to hear that. I hope it sounds like that's projects that are in the chute, but what about projects that are ready to go or could be ready to go with an expedited process? I hope you could come up with a process that would meet a time frame like that, as well as a standard policy that you seek waivers from the federal government, because at least we need to put the onus back on them. And we saw the federal government respond quite swiftly and expeditiously in the 35W bridge, and I think we would get a similar type response right now, but I think it's incumbent upon us and you as agencies to bring that to their attention and bring it to our attention and put a process in place. So I hope that is another piece of your puzzle. Just a comment. I'll leave it at that.
Representative Wagenius?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a very quick question. Are you ready to apply for Minnesota's fair share of the $8 billion high-speed rail money?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagunas, well, we don't have the criteria yet, but we are identifying projects, and we will be prepared to apply as soon as criteria become available. Thank you.
Representative Clark?
Thank you. Just one question about something that I hope you won't rush over, and that's the disadvantaged business enterprises, and that would not be one of the things you'd be seeking a waiver for. Can you just affirm your intentions with that, please?
Yes, we, Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, we will set a specific DBE goals for each of our projects, and we have worked in designing the program that we're developing to ensure that we can meet those DBE goals.
Just because it's just a question on the highway funding, I think the federal stimulus package is supposed to be an enhancement of what we're ready to go. And I know with the federal or state funds not necessarily flowing in as was projected a year ago, are you able to keep going down the list and be actually bringing up additional ones that would not have normally been done with the state?
Mr. Chair, yes, as of the November forecast, we were forecasting that we would be able to maintain the fiscal year 2008 state funds levels for fiscal year 10 and 11, and that's what we need to certify, and we believe, based on the November forecast, we can do that.
And you will have, Ms. McKenzie, another transportation forecast sometime next week as well, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, it's part of the state forecast.
Part of the state forecast. Commissioner, just a couple of things. We received a March 3rd forecast, and the governor will be then submitting his revised budget based on that forecast and understanding what the stimulus package will do to us. Do you have a time frame yet that when we can expect that document? And under what kind of, is it going to be a whole new budget, or is it going to be just a budget changes up with your, under your name? Do you have that yet?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a time frame yet, but if you recall back to the beginning of our conversation this morning, Representative Thiessen's questions, figuring out the human services piece will be challenging in and of itself. So I don't have a time frame for you yet.
So at this point, and I understand there might be some flexibility in it, do you expect it to be a total budget, or do you expect it to be just change orders coming from you? Do you have any idea on that?
Probably that. I'm looking at the state budget director, who's thought this through probably a little more than I have at this point. Probably change items, Mr. Chairman, rather than a whole budget. There's a lot of the budget of the 3,000 pages we won't have to change. So we'll probably submit a fairly, probably more lengthy change items than we normally would.
Okay. Other questions at all? Representative Carlson?
Before we adjourn, I just wanted to make a comment. There have been some comments about the process and where we're at and references to the February 3rd forecast and so on. But something that I'd like to point out on the House side alone, the Finance Committee and the divisions, the Ways and Means Committee, the Tax Committee, and the Planning and Fiscal Policy Committee have had between 65 and 68 budgetary hearings since we started. So the point being that there has been a lot of work and a lot of preparation going into the budget process. And I've had conversations with the Commissioner, and I do want to thank him. When we were setting up this meeting, he indicated that a lot of this would have to be tentative, because we all know there have been massive changes as a result of the federal stimulus package, and no budget has ever been put together until we finally have the February forecast. But the main point I want to make is that the divisions have been working very hard, the other standing committees have been working very hard in preparing our understanding of the governor's budget, what the needs of the states are. And by the way, that 65 to 68 hearing does not include the community meetings that we started this past week. So those would be on top of that 65 to 68. The point being, Mr. Chairman, a lot is being done.
Representative Bitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Chair Carlson. I do appreciate that a lot is being done, and I thank you for that. Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification. After the March 3rd budget forecast is put out, I do believe it's statutory language that the legislature has 25 days, so that'd make it March 28th to pass their budget resolution. Is there anything in law, Mr. Chairman, which that speaks to the governor's revised budget? Do they have a timeline after the March forecast as well?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, our deadline in statute is in the odd year when we do a biennial budget that we have to do it by the first Tuesday after the third Monday
in
January.
In
the January deadline, and that's it.
Thanks, Mr.
And Representative Biskins, to that point, that's why I asked the commissioner on it, and within the ability of that framework, within the massive changes that are going to be involved. We've had a very close working relationship, and we appreciate that. That's why I asked the question whether or not we would have change orders and or the entire budget work over. We fully appreciate the fact that these are going to be some difficult things, particularly in some of the other areas where the federal stimulus package plays a big role, plus the fact that we'll have another forecast that may not be the best forecast in the world. And all those things have to be taken into consideration. But we are also under, as you pointed out, a time frame as well. And so in working with the commissioner, we want to be able to have a budget resolution that's also realistic as it comes through. And if at all possible, we would like to get that done in a more timely fashion than the 25 days. Okay? Any other things for the good? If not, then the next joint meeting, I think, is next Monday again. Receiving?
I think it's next.
No, next
Wednesday.
Wednesday. Wednesday. March 4th. That's right. And the meeting is adjourned.